Chapter 2. London, England, Friday the 5th of May 2000, 0402 hours. 6,000 miles away, John Porter sat inside the back of the Ford Transit and tried not to think about the pounding inside his head. The Transit 350 rolled at a steady 15 miles per down Stradbroke Road, a stretch of neglected terrace houses just off the tatty Tottenham High Road. There were 8 guys in the back of the van, Porter and his mucker John Bald, plus half a dozen officers from SO19, the Met's specialist firearms unit. The SO19 guys looked like they were about to reenact Prince's Gate. They were decked out in flame-retardant assault suits, body armour and ballistic helmets, and they carried Heckler & Koch MP5 carbines chambered with hollow point 9mm parabellum. They rode in silence in the back of the Transit, counting down the seconds until the start of the op. Bald and Porter were dressed in cheap civvies, their Kevlar vests disguised under their sweatshirts, their police-issue Glock 17 semi-automatics holstered around their waists. Bald also wore a Petzl tactical head torch that transmitted a small beam of red light. Less than a minute to go until the op began, and all Porter could think about was how long it had been since he'd had a drink. 6 hours since my last drop, and I'm bloody gasping. Porter felt like shit. His head was throbbing, his mouth tasted like someone had just emptied an ashtray into it, and he had a bad case of the shakes. Nausea rose in his throat as the Transit jounced over a pothole in the road and closed in on the target.
30 seconds, lads,
said Dave Kemper, a thick-set SO19 officer with a harsh Essex accent.
Get ready. And remember, as soon as you're out of that door, we go silent.
Their destination was a 3-story townhouse set 100 metres down Stradbroke Road, directly opposite a DIY superstore. According to Intel, the leaders of one of Europe's most feared drug-smuggling networks were currently holed up inside the townhouse. Sami Hoder and his brothers Berat and Bekim had risen to become the biggest distributors of cocaine and heroin in the south of England. The brothers used a Lithuanian food import business as a front to bring their product into the UK, smuggling the drugs inside the panelling of lorries belonging to the company. Once across the border, the drugs were unpacked at a warehouse before being distributed across London in company-branded delivery vans. From there, the drugs were diluted down and sold on to dealers on a consignment basis. These dealers then pushed the product on the streets of some of the most deprived estates in the country. The Hoder brothers had maimed, tortured, and murdered their business rivals and made tens of millions in profit from getting people hooked on skag. Now they were about to go down. Big time. Scotland Yard had been running surveillance on the Albanians for the past few months, gathering evidence until they had enough to put Sami Hoder and his crew away for life. 2 days ago, they got a lucky break. One of the Hoder brothers' associates had tortured a dealer they suspected of skimming off a slice of the profits and left him for dead. But the dealer survived. He spilled his guts to the cops and led them to a lock-up in Hackney, registered in the name of Berat Hoder. The cops executed a warrant and discovered bank safes inside the lock-up filled with 100 kilos of cocaine, 50 kilos of heroin, cutting agents, and £500,000 in cash. Now they were moving in on the brothers before they found out about the garage raid and skipped town. Surveillance teams had been observing the house for the past 24 hours, getting a Mark I eyeball on the targets and noting their movements. The plan was for a multi-floor assault on the property, with 3 teams moving into position silently before making a hard arrest. From start to finish, the op would take 60 seconds. There were good reasons for going stealthy. The Albanians were believed to have access to some heavy-duty weaponry, and the planners at Scotland Yard didn't want to take any chances. If everything went to plan, Sami Hoder and his mates would all be wearing silver bracelets before they could get a chance to fight back. Which is where Bald and Porter came in. 13 months ago, the 2 regiment men had succeeded in taking down a Serbian war criminal who'd masterminded an attack on SAS selection. Now they were working for MI5 and MI6 full-time on a joint retainer basis, running surveillance ops and snatching targets off the streets, and taking orders from a greasy pole climber in a Savile Row suit called Clarence Hawkridge. The guy ran the counter-terrorism desk over at Thames House, and he was a first-class prick. 12 hours ago, Hawkridge had learned about the op to arrest the Hoda clan. 11 hours ago, Hawkridge had reached out to Bald and Porter. Unbeknown to the Met, Sammy Hoda had been double-dealing with the firm for the last 2 years, supplying MI5 with int on the big hitters in the drugs business, in exchange for protection. It was an arrangement both parties were happy to make. The firm got intelligence on some of the most wanted crime bosses in the country, and Sammy Hoda got to stay out of trouble. But if the police took Sammy Hoda into custody and he spilled his guts, the whole operation would be blown apart.
"If that happens, chaps, heads will roll,"
Hawkridge had informed them at the briefing the previous evening.
"The media would have a field day if they learned that Five had been helping a bunch of sadistic Albanian criminals to stay out of trouble. We can't let that happen, obviously."
"What's the plan?" Bald had asked.
"There's only one solution,"
Hawkridge replied in his silvery smooth voice.
"Sammy Hoda has to go. Permanently."
Bald and Porter had been placed on the team to make sure that Sammy Hoda went down. Now the seconds were ticking down until the op kicked off, and Porter was suffering the effects of the hangover from hell.
"Ready for this, mate?"
asked Bald. Porter nodded.
"I'm fine, Jock."
Bald arched an eyebrow.
"You sure about that? Christ fucking look at you. You're shaking like a dog shitting razor blades."
"It's nothing," Porter growled.
But the truth was, he was a long way from fine. A long fucking way. Porter had managed to avoid the drink after transferring from Hereford to the British Secret Services. Staying off the booze had been a condition of his continued employment with the firm. But then Diana had served him with the divorce papers. They had been living separately for a couple of years by that point, and the divorce didn't come as a major shock. The real bombshell was in the small print. Diana wanted full custody of their daughter, Sandy. The judge agreed, said Porter didn't provide a stable home environment. Now he was only allowed to visit Sandy once a month, for an hour, with a social worker present at all times. Just like that, Porter's world fell apart. First, his life in the regiment had been taken away from him, then the courts had taken his daughter away from him too.
"When you're a hardened alcoholic, all you need is an excuse. And I've got plenty of them," thought Porter.
He started sneaking in a few crafty cans after the gym each day. One or two beers quickly became a dozen. Soon he was hitting the bottle. A few slugs of Bushmills in the morning to loosen himself up. Then he'd finish the bottle in the evening and wash it down with several tinnies. Porter knew he had a problem, but he tried to keep it a secret from Bald and his handlers at the firm. He steered clear of the few off-licences close to his flat and bought most of his drinks from a Turkish supermarket in Kentish Town, always paying in cash and dumping the empty bottles in a bin a few streets away from where he lived. If he needed a drink on the job, he'd fill a plastic water bottle with vodka and help himself to the occasional sip. But in spite of his best efforts, Porter knew Bald could see right through him. He was sure of it.
"You can hide the smell on your breath and the empty bottles in the rubbish, but no matter how well you cover your tracks, you can't hide that glazed look in your eyes."
The pounding inside Porter's head grew louder. His right hand trembled. He was sweating hard under his layers. Jesus, he needed a drink.
"Just get through this op. Then you can get back on it. All you've got to do is get through the next few minutes without being killed."
Suddenly, the transit slowed to a crawl. The driver shouted at the guys in the back. That was the signal for the team to debus. Kemper reached forward and grabbed the sliding door handle, then yanked it open. Porter and Bald jumped down from the van to the rain-slicked tarmac. The SO-19 guys quickly followed. As soon as the last guy had debussed, Kemper pulled the door shut and banged his fist on the side of the transit. Then the driver pulled away, accelerating east down the street for 50 meters before hanging a left into the DIY store car park. The transit was a vital part of the team's cover. Anyone observing the scene would have assumed that the driver was a tradesman pulling in early doors to the local DIY joint. It meant the team could make their approach without arousing the suspicion of anyone bottled up inside the townhouse.
"Fucking move it!" Ball said.
The two blades led the way across the road towards the townhouse, 12 meters away. The street was eerily quiet. A cordon had been set up at either end of the road to cut off traffic, and in the distance Porter could see a bunch of police cars and ambulances parked beyond the tape. On the left side of the road stood the DIY store, surrounded by an ocean of concrete. Opposite the store, there was a long row of grimy three-story townhouses with a parade of shuttered shops further along. The townhouse belonging to the Hoder brothers stood at the end of the terrace. Porter and Bald moved towards the house, their Timberlands pounding against the wet concrete. All the lights in the townhouse were turned off, Porter noted. Dirty white curtains had been pulled across the ground floor windows. The place looked dead. 2 meters from the porch now. Dave Kemper threw up a hand and ordered his team to a halt. He pointed to Bald and Porter.
"All yours, fellas," he whispered.
The SO-19 guys hung back while Bald edged through the gate and crept towards the front door, with Porter close behind. The two Hereford men were the entry team on this op, which meant they were in charge of picking the lock on the front door and leading the rest of the guys into the stronghold. Once inside, the 6 SO-19 guys would divide into 2 3-man teams and move into position on the ground and first floors. Bald and Porter would head to the second floor. As soon as everyone was in place, they would rush into the rooms, disarm the suspects, and drag them away to the reception team waiting outside the police cordon. The intelligence briefing stated that Sammy Hoder's bedroom was on the second floor, which meant that Bald and Porter would come crashing through his door at the exact moment the SO-19 guys were busy sweeping through the lower floors. They would have around 15 seconds to drop Sammy Hoder before the cops came charging up the stairs. Porter crouched beside the wall next to the door, his right hand resting on his Glock holster, while Bald dropped to one knee beside the front door and angled his head so that the Petzl tactical light was directed at the lock, washing it in a bright red glow. Then he retrieved a standard lock-picking kit from his jeans pocket and set to work. The previous day, one of the guys on the surveillance team had taken a photo of the lock using a long-range camera lens, so Bald and Porter knew exactly what type of lock they were dealing with. It was a pin-tumbler mechanism, a common lock on older houses. Easy enough to break for a blade. The regiment had its own lock-picking wing. Its guys were often called out by the Met to crack open various doors and lock-ups. Bald took out the tension wrench and a titanium pick rake from his kit. He slid the tension wrench into the keyhole and applied pressure to the wrench, bending it slightly to force the driver pins inside the lock to rise above the shear line. Then he inserted the pick rake into the top of the lock and started jamming the rake back and forth repeatedly into the keyhole.
"Hurry up, Jock,"
Porter said under his breath as he scanned the street.
"Doing the best I fucking can, mate."
"Just imagine there's a pair of tits on the other side."
Bald glared at his mucker. He worked the lock some more, scrubbing the rake back and forth until all the pins were set in a line. After a few more twists, there was a distinct, soft click as the plug fully rotated and the lock released.
"We're in,"
Porter whispered over the comms mic. Bald slowly pushed the door open, careful not to make any noise. Then he edged stealthily into the hallway. Porter shadowed him, drawing his Glock 17 and scanning the scene in front of him, his ears pricked as he listened for any sound coming from within the house. The place reeked of ganja and sweat. There were takeaway cartons and beer cans all over the place. Porter stilled his breath and stepped deeper into the hallway, eyes gradually adjusting to the half-light. 2 meters ahead of him, he could see the staircase leading up to the upper floors. The hallway carried on past the stairs into the back of the house. Porter stopped at the foot of the stairs, looked past his shoulder, and indicated to Bald, this way. Bald nodded. Behind him, Dave Kemper motioned for the first three-man team to enter the house. Porter turned and crept up the stairs, gritting his teeth against the monstrous hangover brewing inside his skull. The treads groaned under his weight. Halfway up, he stopped momentarily to glance down at the front door, checking on the other teams. Kemper was leading the ground floor team towards the bedrooms at the rear of the property. MP5 carbine stocks tucked tight to each man's shoulder, torch attachments burning on their foregrips. A few steps behind them, the second three-man SO-19 team was moving into the hallway 6 meters behind Bald. Porter faced ahead and continued up the stairs. Another 2 steps, and he hit the first floor landing. He traced the Glock across his line of sight, searching for the slightest movement. Nothing. Clear. 1 floor down, 1 floor to go. Porter and Bald inched across the landing and headed for the second flight of stairs, watching their step and taking care to avoid brushing against the crap strewn all over the place. The Hoda brothers might be multi-millionaires, thought Porter, but they lived like scum. Everywhere he looked, he saw piles of rubbish, rotting chicken wings and pizza slices, ashtrays overflowing with cigarette butts. In another couple of strides, he reached the stairs and climbed towards the bedroom on the top floor. Bald at his 6 o'clock, the second three-man SO-19 on the first floor landing and moving towards the first closed door. In his earpiece, Porter heard Kemper saying,
"Team one, ready."
Porter and Bald were 4 steps from the second floor landing now. A second voice crackled in his ear, Officer Steve Crabb, the leader of the team covering the first floor.
"Team two, ready."
In the next moment, Porter hit the landing. He moved towards the bedroom door and pushed himself against the wall to the left. Bald stopped by the wall on the other side of the door. Both had their weapons drawn.
"Team three, ready," said Porter.
There was a long pause of silence. 2 seconds, maybe 3. Porter blocked out the pounding headache and tightened his fingers around the Glock 17's polymer grip. Kemper came back on the comms.
"Stand by. Stand by. Go."
Downstairs, everything went real noisy, real fucking quick. The dead stillness was broken as the two SO-19 teams crashed into the rooms on the lower floors. Through his earpiece, Porter could hear the sharp crack of doors being kicked in, followed by several angry shouts. Dave Kemper yelling at someone to stand still. Steve Crabb shouting,
"Armed police!"
As it swung open, Porter charged through the door ahead of Bald, his index finger tense on the Glock trigger as he swept his weapon in a broad arc from left to right, eyes scanning the room for any sign of Sammy Hoda. The room was 4 meters by 4. A street lamp burned outside the window, throwing murky orange light over the interior. There was a TV in one corner of the room, with a stack of DVDs and a PlayStation next to it. Bottle of Stolichnaya vodka on the coffee table, plus a couple of joints and a few cans of Tiske Lager. Clothes spilled out of a bin bag stashed in the opposite corner. The bed against the back wall had the sheets pulled back, revealing a stained mattress. The decor was somewhere between student digs and crack den. Whatever Sammy Hoda was spending his wonga on, it wasn't home furnishings. Sammy Hoda stood next to the bed, dressed in a vest and a pair of boxers. He had a dazed look in his eyes. The guy stared at Porter, a look of confusion playing out on his acne-riddled face. By now, Bald had pushed through the doorway. He stood at Porter's shoulder, his Glock trained on the Albanian.
"Police! Police!"
Porter shouted, loud enough that the guys on the other assault teams would pick up his voice over the comms.
"Stand still! Stand still!"
Sammy Hoda did as he was told, his eyes darting between Bald and Porter. Through his earpiece, Porter could hear one of the suspects shouting at the cops in his guttural foreign tongue. Another 20 seconds, he figured, and the other 2 teams would have their targets secured. Porter nodded at Bald. The jock nodded back. "Let's do this." Porter holstered his Glock and rushed over to Sammy Hoda. Bald stood just inside the doorway, keeping the business end of his pistol aimed at the Albanian. Hoda kept looking from Bald to Porter and shaking his head. Like, maybe if he shook his head enough times, his problems would magically disappear.
"You can't fucking do this," he said. "This is a big mistake."
Porter ignored him. He brushed past the Albanian and dropped down beside the bed. According to the firm's briefing, the guy kept an illegal weapon in a shoebox underneath the bed. Porter thrust an arm under the bed and found a shoebox shoved way back. He grabbed it, pulled it out, and lifted the lid. Nestled inside was a stainless steel pistol that Porter recognized as an old Czech CZ-75 semi-automatic. 9mm, 12-round mag, hammer-forged barrel. Solid, but unspectacular, as you might expect from the nation that designed the Skoda. He tugged back the slider, saw a round glinting dully in the chamber. Then he shot to his feet and turned to face the target. Sammy Hoder glanced over his shoulder at Porter. He caught sight of the CZ-75 in Porter's grip, and his eyes went so wide they looked as if they might pop out of his skull.
"That's not mine. I don't know how that shit got there."
"Hands behind your back," Bald demanded.
The guy stopped protesting and fell silent. He sighed and faced forward, presenting his wrists to Porter. Like this was no big deal, like he figured that in a couple of hours he'd get on the blower to his source at MI5 and walk away free. He figured wrong. Porter maneuvered so that he was standing just behind and to the right of the Albanian. He flipped up the safety lever on the side of the CZ-75 receiver with his thumb and raised the weapon. Lined up the wall, half a meter to the right of Bald between the front post and rear notch sights, relaxed his forearm, tensed his shoulder muscles, squeezed the trigger twice. The room lit up. The CZ barked, the muzzle flashed, two rounds exploded out of the pistol snout. The sound was deafening. Porter felt the CZ recoil in his grip as he fired. The first bullet struck the wall roughly 12 inches to the right of Bald, embedding itself in the brickwork. The second round hit the doorframe less than 6 inches from Bald and tore a chunk out of the wooden frame, showering him in needle-like splinters. Bald instinctively flinched. It took him half a second to shift his firing stance. Then he lined up Sammy Hoder's head between the sights on his Glock. Porter jumped back from the guy, stepping out of the killing zone. The Albanian's eyes went wide. He had just enough time to realize what was happening. He raised a hand at Bald.
"No! Fuck! Don't!"
Bald pulled the trigger, emptying two rounds into the Albanian. The 9 millis thudded into the guy's skull, severing the plumbing in the front of his brain. His neck jerked back, and he fell away, his arms pinwheeling, like someone had just cut his strings. The guy was dead before he hit the floor. He slumped back against the wall, his jaw slack, the hot stink of blood filling the air. Porter stared at the two bullet holes in the wall to Bald's right. Firing Sammy Hoder's gun had been necessary to make his death look like a justifiable killing, which meant Porter needed to shoot a couple of rounds close enough to Bald to make it look as if Hoder had been aiming at him. But Porter had got his angles wrong and almost ended up taking off Bald's head in the process.
"Christ," he thought, "maybe I am losing it. I almost slotted my mucker."
Voices sparked up in the earpiece, more than one of them. Kemper and Crab, and a bunch of the other officers responding to the gunshots on the second floor, wondering what the fuck was going on. Porter and Bald had a few seconds until the SO-19 crew came storming up the stairs. Porter snapped out of his stupor, dropped down beside the slotted Albanian, and quickly started wiping down the CZ-75 with his sweatshirt. He could hear the loud thud of footsteps pounding up the stairs. He had a few seconds until the cops hit the second floor.
"Fucking hurry," Bald said.
Porter placed the Czech semi-automatic in Sammy Hoder's right hand and clamped his chubby fingers around the grip. Then he bolted to his feet and rushed past Bald into the hallway, digging his Glock 17 out of his holster. Swung around so that he was standing outside the door with Bald a couple of steps inside the room. Kemper came vaulting up the stairs with Crab and another officer hard on his heels. He flashed a look at Porter, then stopped in the doorway and glanced inside the bedroom. Saw Sammy Hoder lying against the wall, blood disgorging from the holes in his skull and slickening his front. Bald stood over the dead Albanian, gripping his Glock 17 and shaking his head.
Oh, Jesus, said Bald. Fucking hell, I've killed a guy.
Kemper shaded white.
What happens?
He didn't give me any choice, Bald said,
turning to face Kemper and pretending to look anxious.
Bastard pulled a weapon on us.
It's true, Porter added. We entered the room to arrest the target and shouted for him to put his hands up, just like we'd been told. The fucker drew his weapon and let off a couple of rounds. That's when we engaged.
The suspect fired his weapon?
Kemper asked, working his face into a deep frown.
Aye, Porter replied. Two shots.
He pointed with his head at the bullet holes lodged in the wall and doorframe.
You'll find the slugs in there.
Kemper cocked his head at Porter.
Where were you when this happened?
Outside the room, covering Jock.
Shit,
Kemper muttered.
I can't believe I fucking killed him,
Bald said, fixing his eyes on the slotted Albanian. Kemper turned to Officer Crabb.
Cordon the area off, clear everyone out, and get the Sockos down here ASAP. I want fingerprints, blood splatter, the lot. No one's to touch or move a fucking thing. Right now, this house is a crime scene, got it?
Yes, Chief.
And for Christ's sakes, keep the press away from here.
Crabb nodded, turned and marched down the stairs with the other SO-19 officer. Kemper watched them leave. Then he turned towards Bald and sucked the air between his teeth.
I'll have to get on the blower and notify the PCA about this. We're legally required to report every police shooting to them. They'll be wanting a word with the two of you at the debrief, no doubt.
Bald opened his mouth to speak, but Kemper cut him off.
Look, fellas, I know you were bang within your rights to engage the shooter, but we've got to do things by the book here. You understand?
Bald and Porter exchanged a look. Porter looked back to Kemper, nodded.
We'll answer any questions they have.
Kemper nodded and cleared his throat.
Right then, you better make your way down to the cordon. An investigator will be waiting there to take both your statements.
Porter headed downstairs with Bald. They made their way down to the ground floor hallway and stepped out into the street. The noise of the assault had stirred the locals out of their sleep. Lights were switching on up and down the street. A few residents stood outside their front doors, rubbernecking the scene. The reception area downstream from the townhouse was buzzing with activity. A trio of police officers were processing the Albanians while another cop read them their rights. Police dog handlers remained close by in case any of the Albanians tried to make a run for it. A paramedic team was busy lowering a stretcher from the back of an ambo. Bit late for that, thought Porter. He grinned at Bald.
You should give yourself an Oscar, he said. You almost had me fooled back there, Jock. Looks like Kemper bought it.
Yeah, well, Bald shrugged.
We nearly screwed up the op, thanks to you.
The fuck's that supposed to mean?
Bald rounded on Porter. His face was twitching with anger.
You almost clipped me back there, pal. That second round was a cunt hair away from my face. Another inch or so, and it would have been me lying on the carpet with the hole in my head.
Porter clenched his jaws and met Bald's piercing stare.
It was an accident. The pistol must have been dodgy. Christ, you know what those old CZs are like. They're dodgier than a two-bob watch.
Bald shook his head.
The gun wasn't the problem, mate. You are.
It was an honest mistake, that's all, Porter said.
He could feel the hangover returning. A dull pain throbbed inside his skull.
Bollocks!
Bald stepped into Porter's face and glowered at his mucker.
You'd better sort yourself out, because the next time you almost clip me, I'll drop you. And mark my words, I won't fucking miss.